What's up, everybody, and welcome to a very special edition of the .NET Countdown. This is the Pro Wrestling .NET All Access Podcast. I'm Will Pruitt. You're probably used to hearing me on a TNA Impact audio rant, and I'm along with Jake Von Hetch, who you're probably used to hearing along with Chris Shore talking about WWE SmackDown on Saturday mornings when those go All Access. And we do a weekly show for .NET members called the .NET Countdown, and what we do is we count down the top five and three worst moments of the week. And this is kind of a big addition because there were two episodes of SmackDown for the week that we do. We do kind of an awkward week. Basically, we do Thursday. The week starts on Thursday and ends on Tuesday night as far as what we're counting down. So this is going to include TNA Impact, Friday's SmackDown episode, Monday night's Raw, and today and Tuesday night's SmackDown episode, as well as ROH from over the weekend, whenever it is in your area. But the date today is Thursday, December 1st. Holy crap, it's 25 days to Christmas. That is frightening. But, you know, we're going to launch into things, and this is just a little taste of a weekly show that .NET members get weekly since this summer, actually, when we started doing it. We have not missed a week. So, Jake, how are things?
Doing really well, man. We've had a pretty busy week. I mean, we had the holidays last week, and then we had SmackDown on Friday. You know, we had that very good Raw on Monday, I thought, was a very entertaining show, and then we had that absolute crap sandwich of a SmackDown on Tuesday, aside from the, you know, the main event. So I'm actually, you know, kind of excited to dig into all of it. I mean, it wasn't an especially newsworthy week in pro wrestling, but there's definitely plenty to talk about.
Yeah, and one quick thing about that SmackDown, did you expect it to be as Christmassy as it was?
I mean, that part kind of caught me off guard. I did not expect it to be, you know, I expected a holiday-themed match and, you know, maybe, you know, Foley to dress up in his Santa suit because, you know, he's mentioned in some of his books how much of a Christmas fan he is. But I did not expect the set decorations and the holiday party backstage that took up three segments on the show and you know, they had two or three holiday-themed matches, so they definitely sold that holiday special like it was a big deal, but I don't think it really turned out like they expected.
And judging by the ratings, it really didn't turn out like they expected. But let's launch into it with our top five from the week, and let's start out with number five, and that is Alberto Del Rio versus CM Punk for the WWE Championship on Raw Monday night. A solid match, not as good as their Survivor Series encounter, but that's understandable when you look at the fact that they had a commercial break in the middle of the match, they had less time, and really they were telling a different story. And it was different than their Survivor Series match, and I appreciated that. They also had the added stipulation of if the champion loses, they will get disqualified, or if the champion gets disqualified, they will lose the title, which I'm never a fan of personally. But in the end, it turned out to be a pretty good match, and you know, it was a nice victory for Punk in front of a large TV audience.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of those stipulations either because it definitely adds quite a bit of ambiguity about who exactly the heel and the face are in the feud. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Punk is getting the cheers here, but you know, they definitely bring up the point that, hey, you know, Punk's going to get himself intentionally disqualified to hold on to his belt, and that's definitely not a babyface thing to do. But I agree with you. I mean, it was a good TV main event, but it wasn't anywhere near as good as their Survivor Series match. They had that one kind of unfortunate spot at the end where I think, I don't know if it was, I think it was Del Rio that kind of goofed up that spot where he got dropped onto the turnbuckle. Didn't look very good. But, you know, overall it was a very good match. And, you know, I like both of these guys. I think they're both great performers. And it looks like we're going to get to see another match between them at TLC. And I don't think that's a bad thing because I think they can top their performance of Survivor Series if they're given, you know, the right stipulation and the right amount of time.
And do you think that's where they go for TLC? Because when you look at the WWE Championship picture right now, I mean, Punk beat Alberto Del Rio decisively twice now. You know, John Cena, who always has to be considered as in that picture, just had a segment with Roddy Piper, and you know, John Cena, it's kind of a mystery what you do with him going into Royal Rumble and WrestleMania and all that with his WrestleMania match set. There's nothing that they really have to build up with John Cena. It seems like he's in a holding pattern almost until you get to Mania. So what do you do with him to keep him out of the title picture almost? And then you've got these guys, then you've got the rest of the Raw upper card that seems like they could belong, but like The Miz. If you're booking, where do you go with the WWE Championship at TLC?
I think they can get one more match out of Del Rio and Punk. I mean, they both have good chemistry in the ring together, and all their matches have been highly entertaining. So I think you can count on that to deliver on pay-per-view. I think it'd be a little early. We saw a pretty stark character change for The Miz the past couple of weeks. I mean, especially this past Monday. So I think it might be a little bit too early in the mix of things for that to put him right back into a title feud. And most likely he'd end up taking the loss, and that wouldn't be very good for him. Cena, like you said, he's kind of an enigma right now. I don't know exactly, what you do with him, just because it wouldn't make sense for him to be, trading titles with somebody heading towards his imminent feud with The Rock, which, should be starting up in earnest here pretty soon. So I would think they go one more match with Del Rio, and then maybe they go to The Miz after that.
Now, what would you think about a four-way TLC match or a four-way ladder match or something, like some people have proposed, where you get all four of those guys in there, no one takes the fall because it's a ladder match, and, in the end, Punk kicks Del Rio in the head, takes the belt down?
That wouldn't be a bad way to go. I mean, as long as you're not, giving away a clean finish and you're, siphoning off somebody's heat. I mean, The Miz and Del Rio are both in a similar spot right now. I mean, Del Rio's been pretty severely deflated. He's taken a lot of clean pins, and The Miz basically got his ass handed to him for a couple of months there with Truth, feuding with various people. So, I mean, it's neither of them are in a position to take a clean loss, and I don't think you want Punk or Cena taking losses at this point either. So maybe if you stick them all in a ladder match and have some kind of fluky finish, you can avoid the pratfalls of having somebody take a clean pin.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just an idea. It's not even one that I condone. I really don't know, because personally I have no interest in seeing Punk and Del Rio again. It's a good match, and if they're given a ladder match, I'll probably be excited about the impending quality of that match, because Del Rio showed at Extreme Rules that he's willing to take some bumps. He's willing to do what it takes to be in a WWE high-quality ladder match. But I really, as far as the story goes, I don't need to see Punk call Del Rio boring again, and I don't really need to see Del Rio be boring again. So there's that. Let's move on now to number four, and this was a tag team match from Friday's episode of SmackDown. And it was Zack Ryder and Sheamus versus Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger. This was a really nice WWE-style tag team match. I thought Ryder gained a little something being in there with these three guys. Sheamus always looks impressive. And, of course, Dolph Ziggler, just a phenomenal talent who's breaking out with every performance.
Yeah, I like this match a lot. I mean, I watched SmackDown Friday night, and Ryder definitely picked up some steam from this. I mean, he's been picking up some wins lately. He picked up another good win from Swagger on Monday's Raw. But this was, I believe, like a 17 or 18 minute tag match on a SmackDown episode that featured quite a bit of wrestling. But this was definitely the longest match, and for good reason, because it really delivered 17 minutes of really solid wrestling, and the finish was good. And Sheamus at this point is hot. He's doing everything right. Ziggler is exploding. He picked up that win from Orton on Monday too. So, two rising stars. Then you got another guy in Ryder who obviously has a connection to the fans, and he has his own audience, and they were very vocal for him too. So it was just a very well wrestled match with three out of the four guys involved being very over. So I don't know where you go wrong there.
Yeah, and I mean, I almost wonder, when looking at the time it got, were they just going, man, it's the day after Thanksgiving. Nah, we don't know what to put on here. Hey, guys, can you go round 20? I mean, it kind of seems like that's how it happened, and if it was, that's absolutely fantastic, because this was, to me at least, the match of the night. That four-way match at the end was really good, but this was even better. It was the match of the night, and it really... Do you feel like Dolph Ziggler and Jack Swagger lost anything that they hadn't already lost by taking the fall in this match?
No, I mean, I think Ziggler is pretty much Teflon. I mean, he's the kind of heel that can take a loss and not really lose much from it. And, you know, Swagger at this point is just so beaten down that, I don't think he has anything left to lose. So I don't think either of those guys were especially damaged by the way this match went down, especially because they looked so competitive throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I would think, I could make an argument that Dolph Ziggler especially, and Jack Swagger in a way, almost gained something from being competitive with Sheamus. Maybe not with Zack Ryder, who it seems like WWE is still trying to find the definite direction for, as far as, well, are we going to make him kind of funny? Are we going to make him really serious? Where does Zack Ryder land on the spectrum? But, you know, it seems like they're still experimenting there, but hanging with Sheamus, it's a big deal. Sheamus is a former two-time WWE champion. He's presented as a big deal. He gets regular exposure on Raw and SmackDown and does a lot of media appearances. Sheamus is one of those guys who in a year or two is going to be on that next level of stardom. And he's getting there now. People have seen him. People know that he exists now. I've had people ask me who the heck that redhead white guy wrestling is. So being in there with Sheamus really, I think, enhances what they do.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I don't see how they lost anything, and if anything, you're right. I mean, being in the ring with Sheamus, who, you know, the WWE actually presents as one of their premier talents now, you know, aside from the Ortons and the Cenas and the, you know, perhaps the Big Shows of the world, the veterans that have been around for a long time who do media appearances. I mean, Sheamus is probably the guy that most recently has been added into that category of guys that WWE thinks are major superstars. So, you know, anytime you're in the ring with them and you look competitive, you know, I think it's a boost for, your character and probably, you know, the fans' perception of you.
Yep. And now let's move on to our number three. And this one ties into our number two, but it was on two separate shows. So I'm going to say them both at once because I don't think you can talk about one without discussing the other. Our number three moment of the week was Daniel Bryan versus Mark Henry in a steel cage on SmackDown on Tuesday night. And our number two moment of the week was the Daniel Bryan and Mark Henry attempted cash-in on SmackDown on Friday night, and how that played into the end of the night and Daniel Bryan winning that four-way match on SmackDown. I enjoyed how this whole story played out. I really liked, and I was surprised when so many people were down on the attempted cash-in and Daniel Bryan getting foiled. I really like the idea that he got foiled in this cash-in. I like that he was impatient, and he admits it, that, you know, he was a hypocrite, he was flawed, and that he didn't get his way. And then, of course, you get into that cage match they had, which was just fantastic. And it was a really nice David and Goliath story where I think Daniel Bryan really gained something by being in that match.
Yeah, I mean, on Friday's show of last week, you know, he had that attempted cash-in, which, you know, when I first heard about it and reacted to it without, you know, obviously, you know, your first gut reaction is, is based on very limited information. I immediately thought, oh, crap, they're going to screw this up. But, you know, when I watched it, I didn't have that same reaction. I actually kind of liked it. And you know, then he had a very good four-way match to close that SmackDown to pick up a title shot, since the cash-in was ruled invalid because Mark Henry was injured. And then on Monday, he cut that promo with Cole, which, you know, while it didn't set the world on fire, I thought it gave a pretty good justification, you know, for what he did on Friday, saying that, you know, Mark Henry attempted to injure him. You know, he could have ended his career. His briefcase doesn't guarantee me anything. I have to take my opportunities when they present themselves. You know, I think that's a pretty good rationale for what happened on Friday. Henry came out and they had a promo together that was very good as well. And then Friday's cage match, was excellent, really. I mean, it was the only moment on that show where, you know, you could suspend disbelief and get into the show and actually, you know, enjoy it as a form of entertainment. I mean, the rest of that show, literally 105 minutes of SmackDown, was just hot garbage. And then we had this great cage match to close the show that, you know, even if you were going to think of one in your head, I don't think you could have designed a better match to kind of launch, you know, Daniel Bryan into this next phase of this story arc where he's going to have to, you know, kind of build himself back up towards another title shot at WrestleMania or whenever they decide to have him, excuse me, cash in Money in the Bank. So both of these were, you know, both of these moments on the countdown here were excellent examples of what the WWE has done right, both with Mark Henry and Daniel Bryan as of late.
Yeah, I even remember, you know, looking at the forum on Friday and as people started to watch SmackDown and their kind of informed opinions of the cash-in played in, and some people still weren't fans of it, and that really surprised me. And looking at it just from my point of view, even when I read it, I thought, that's kind of cool. And I like the idea because you can't go back and see. It doesn't really contradict cash-ins of the past by saying Mark Henry wasn't medically cleared, because every other cash-in like that had happened after a match, which means that the wrestler was already medically cleared for the match. Now, you can say they should have to get medically cleared again, which, you know, they should, but that didn't happen. So I really enjoyed that idea and the fact that Daniel Bryan went on, kept the briefcase, and won that number one contenders match. I thought it's almost like in one night, SmackDown creative went, you know, we've really not been using Daniel Bryan that much. And it was a way in one night to tell his story and to catapult him into another level, onto a level where you thought, maybe he could. And I think then for a week they told that story of maybe he could. Not he will, not it's definite. You know, not even like Randy Orton going into a match with Mark Henry where Henry looks super vulnerable. It was just, man, maybe he could. Daniel Bryan could. And then, of course, the match continued to tell that story. Between the in-ring story and the story that happened, you know, between the in-ring story and the verbal story being told, this is some of the best work I think I've seen WWE do just story-wise in a long time.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, looking back on all the stories that, you know, WWE's been telling for the last, you know, 3 or 4 months that, you know, we've all reacted to as being good. I mean, the preponderance of them all involve Mark Henry. So, you know, it's a statement about how good he's been lately that, you know, just about everything that he's been involved in, you know, has turned into, you know, something that's been great to watch. Whether, you know, he extracted a couple of pretty decent matches out of the Big Show. You know, Daniel Bryan made him look spectacular in the cage on Tuesday. You know, and, you know, if you haven't seen that match yet, it's worth going out of your way to see just the finish with the World's Strongest Slam from the corner off the second rope, because that was a spectacular-looking move to close the match. And, you know, even though Daniel Bryan takes the clean loss, you know, he was made to look, you know, like a potential world champion. And, you know, when you're trying to build a guy towards an eventual, you know, major win in his career, I don't know what more you can ask of him.
Now, I have a question for you about Money in the Bank. Do you think that after the story and everything, do you think Daniel Bryan's the guy that catches it in and loses?
I don't think so. I mean, is it possible? Sure. I mean, and, you know, there's probably ways that you could do it where, you know, it would actually end up being a net positive for Bryan. But, you know, the way that it's gone in the past, I mean, past history being the best indicator of future results, I would say that, you know, just about everybody who's cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase has won the title, and I don't expect that to change, you know. But I guess, you know, I'm not willing to rule it out just because, you know, storylines sometimes play out that way.
I would almost want to see that because I think, you know, you think about the last few Money in the Bank winners. Miz did really well with it. But Big Show, right? No, Kane was a Money in the Bank winner.
Mm-hmm.
You think about Jack Swagger as a Money in the Bank winner. Alberto Del Rio. Money in the Bank, I mean, I don't feel like it helped those guys. I don't feel like just setting cash in really did much for those guys. especially Jack Swagger, which, you know, I feel like we're talking about a lot today, but it's pretty evident this week. But the cash-in didn't do much for them. What would have done a lot for them, I almost feel like would have been being the first to lose. I think the guy that's the first to lose has a better opportunity to make something of that, to make something of that story, because it's a new story than Jack Swagger did to make something of his world championship reign, than Alberto Del Rio did to make something of that first WWE championship reign. I think the story of someone losing and coming back from it, if it's told correctly, meaning if Mark Henry is somehow involved at this point in WWE, if that story is told correctly, I think you've got a bigger opportunity with someone losing than you do with someone winning.
So if Brian cashes in at TLC and loses, do you put him on the top of your list to win the Royal Rumble, the challenge for the title anyway at Mania?
I actually think that would be a brilliant way to use him. I don't know that they would. I don't know that they're ready to give someone like Daniel Bryan the Royal Rumble win, especially when you have someone, you know, I like Daniel Bryan, but when you have someone who's so... It's so apparent that they're ready for something like that in Dolph Ziggler sitting there. When you have someone where Daniel Bryan, he's good and he can rise to that, but Dolph Ziggler's ready. Dolph Ziggler is ready-made. You plug him in and he's there. You don't have to let him rise to it. You don't have to let him build to it. Dolph Ziggler's there. I don't see how you give it to – really, I don't see how you give the Rumble to anyone else. And that's me making a very early, premature prediction. So forgive me if that's wrong, folks. Don't bet on it. But I think, you know, if he cashes and loses at TLC, Daniel Bryan definitely has a chance of achieving his WrestleMania dream still by winning the Rumble.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that's always kind of been in the back of my head as a possibility. You know, if they decide to have him cash in early, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, maybe he doesn't win the Rumble, but maybe he's in the match for an hour or something and you know, it comes down to him and Ziggler and, you know, Ziggler picks up the win, and, you know, they could do anything they want. I mean, obviously, it's a completely fictional world that they develop. So, you know, there's plenty of ways to go about it. But I at this point, I think early signs point to Bryan getting a chance at WrestleMania, and I think that's awesome considering, you know, how most WrestleMania, you know, main events of the past have always included, you know, very established talent. So it's good to see the possibility that we have two major you know, breakthroughs coming, possibilities coming at WrestleMania.
And how awesome would it be to see Daniel Bryan and Dolph Ziggler do what Shawn Michaels and the British Bulldog did in 1995 and go, or, you know, what Vince McMahon and Steve Austin did in 1999 in a really bad Royal Rumble. And to see them be number one and number two and last all the way through the match, I feel like that would be a pretty dang good effort, and really an impressive feat from both men.
Yeah, I mean, the possibilities are limitless at this point. I mean, it's all conjecture and speculation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it would definitely sell, you know, send the point home that they're serious about, you know, this new talent initiative that Vince has been talking about and making sure that, you know, new stars are given the opportunity to be put in positions to, you know, to actually shine and you know, we actually get a chance to go over other talents that have been around for a longer period of time. I mean, if there's nothing that illustrates, you know, a commitment to new talent, it would be, you know, this time of the year actually taking the time to put the focus on them instead of going into the old bag of tricks and, you know, bringing back all these other older superstars that, you know, have made the money in the past.
Exactly. And, let's talk about our number one moment now, and I can't think of anything else that could be the best moment of the week. Piper's Pit with Roddy Piper and John Cena. And this is, again, a good step in storytelling. I thought for once the John Cena story didn't bore me, but it was kind of, it was exciting. It was new and fresh and something that really deserves to be talked about here. Roddy Piper tells John Cena, the booze have to be getting to you. Listen to this reaction you're getting. Displays for him the reactions that other stars of John Cena's caliber have been getting, and basically says, you're not matching up. What's going on that you are not matching up? I thought this was an absolutely phenomenal segment.
Yeah, I mean, this is Piper, you know, being the Piper that made the Pit famous. I mean, this is the type of performance that you hope Piper can deliver. And, you know, sometimes he, you know, his A game isn't in the building with him, but this time it was. And I thought, you know, he was excellent here. Cena was actually very good here, you know, playing off of, you know, Piper's attempts to kind of goad him into showing some fire and some passion. And, you know, I think the point of this segment was Piper, you know, being the guy that started off WrestleMania with Hulk Hogan, telling and you know, bared witness to, you know, what happened to Hulk Hogan in that stretch in the early 90s where he had his falling out with Vince and went to WCW and, you know, eventually had that heel turn. You know, I think he's telling John Cena not to be Hulk Hogan, you know, not to be the guy, you know, that ignores, you know, his own better, you know, interest in to stick, you know, with the fans and try not to ignore them. So, you know, Piper did his best to kind of get Cena to move along the path of actually addressing, you know, his own critics instead of just, you know, ignoring them and doing the whole rise above hate shtick that he's been doing. I mean, that works, and it'll sell some T-shirts to kids. But in the long run, I think Roddy actually, you know, might have made a valid point that, you know, if Cena loses the fans by ignoring them, you know, eventually he's going to be forced into being something that he doesn't want to be rather than, you know, just embracing it and becoming that right now.
Yeah. I really feel like this may have been chapter one of what we're all kind of hoping to see. And no matter what, it's chapter one that we want to see. More than people want a heel turn, a definitive John Cena's evil, you know, I'll take a shift in a radical shift in the John Cena character that changes it somehow over Hollywood John Cena. I don't need to see Hollywood John Cena, but he has to change. He has to evolve. And that's what hasn't happened really since 2005. John Cena won the WWE Championship, and now 6 years later, it's the same act, it's the same shtick, and he's won 10 championships. I mean, the guy just, there's nothing different about him between then and now, and it's a real issue. So I think this is the beginning of some sort of shift, and I was actually talking, my brother and I talk about wrestling more than people should, and I was actually talking with him this week, and he is absolutely convinced that the championship that John Cena is turning heel and he's going to become champion at the top of next, or not at the top of next year, but after WrestleMania and go on a big heel run, possibly spray paint the belt. And I just don't buy it. I would love to see the heel turn, and you know I predicted it at Survivor Series and feel the shame of issuing a wrong prediction all over the internet because of it. But I think this is the beginning of a change. Whatever that change is, this is it, and I'm excited to see where they go into WrestleMania and whether John Cena comes out as the babyface who has weathered the hate and people love him more now, or whether he comes out as the heel that people now absolutely hate because he snapped. I think that they're doing some good work.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he needs to go out there, you know, and be Dr. Evil. I mean, I don't think, you know, that's necessarily what it's going to take to generate interest in his character again. But, you know, I think, you know, the people that almost universally cheered Cena in, you know, 2005, 2006, you know, kind of started falling away once they realized there wasn't any other, you know, anything else to come out of the envelope. I mean, it was basically, that was the full reveal, this is the character, you know, and it's been the same old act for 5 or 6 years. And you know, I hear the arguments that, well, we don't want to turn John Cena heel because, you know, he's a cash cow, he sells merchandise, he sells, you know, he packs arenas, he you know, the house show revenues will drop if people, you know, are coming out to see, or, you know, if the kids can't see their hero and whatnot. But, I mean, imagine all the people that fell off. I mean, WWE viewership, pay-per-view buys, television ratings, you know, house show ticket sales, they're all down from 2005, 2006, 2007. I mean, you need to bring back some of those fans that left. I think a lot of them left because, you know, the guy that dominated the top of the card has been basically doing the same thing for 5 or 6 years. And, you know, if you compare the number of shows that Cena works when you count television and house shows and pay-per-views and everything, I mean, 5 years between 2005 and, you know, 2010, or 6 years if you count 2011, I mean, that's, you know, that's like 25 years worth of shows if he was working between 1970 and 1995. So, you know,
yeah,
it's a very different universe that John Cena lives in, and it's a long time to be using the same character. So it's not surprising that people have you know, kind of started walking away from him and have started booing him. So I think, you know, anything that even tweaks his character a little bit and, you know, can generate some interest and cast some doubt onto whether he's always going to be the same old guy is going to be good for business. I don't buy the line that, you know, you can't change anything about John Cena because it's going to, you know, it's going to change the way that women and children perceive him, because I think a lot of people that grew up watching Cena are now, you know, starting to fall into that same trap of being tired of him as well.
And even if it does change the way that they see him, there are men who pay to go to arenas to boo John Cena right now. Heels have drawn money for years. Look at Ric Flair in the NWA in the 80s. Heel drawing money. People paid to go and boo the crap out of Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen. I think that's exactly what will happen with John Cena. People, you know, WCW did great numbers in 96 and 97 because people wanted to boo Hulk Hogan. The problem is that they let it go on for too long. But people want to boo him. Kids will pay money because babyface of the month might be able to take down the heel, because Sheamus has stood up to John Cena, told him to stop being whatever he is being, and is ready to fight him. Kids are going to pay money to see that. Kids are going to pay money because their hero needs them, because this heel is so strong. I mean, I feel like WWE, and in a way it's their history as well, they've forgotten how well a heel main act can draw.
Yeah, I mean, and they already kind of have an anti-hero in CM Punk to kind of fill the void left behind by Cena as well. I mean, you know, if anything, Punk proved that he can get just about everybody in the WWE behind him if you just give the guy a microphone and let him talk.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, you know, why they're so crippled with fear that nobody's going to be able to replace Cena, because, I mean, they already showed that, you know, when they were doing the Punk versus Cena feud, you know, that half the crowd or even more was behind Punk. I mean, Cena was getting booed out of Chicago, and, you know, he also got booed out of Los Angeles at SummerSlam. So I don't know, you know, where the apprehension comes in unless WWE knows something that we don't, and that, you know, Cena just doesn't want to be a heel, or, you know, whatever the case may be. But, you know, I think there's plenty of money to be had in, you know, you might not even have to turn him into a full-on villain, but, you know, there's definitely room for change in Cena's act, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, there were kids, I was at SummerSlam, and there were kids in John Cena t-shirts booing him. That was kind of weird. But that's the kind of reaction that can be gotten here. That's, you have these millions of kids who have bought John Cena merchandise, and I've been at other events where a little kid behind me was almost crying when John Cena came out because he was so excited to see him. That kid's gonna hate him. That's the fun. Like, that kid's gonna hate him, and anytime you bring out passion, you're going to make money. And I think John Cena, whatever it is, if they do the heel turn, and if he's, you know, he doesn't have to be Batty McBad twirling his mustache, although I think we've talked about the need for John Cena to have a mustache many times on this show, and I would like to reiterate it, but he doesn't have to be super evil villain, but if he's not that great guy, kids are going to hate him, and it's going to be so much fun to see those reactions, and really to see John Cena free to play with those kids and to play with those reactions.
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't mean that he has to do, you know, turn into rated R John Cena and do a bunch of ridiculous things and insult children and women in the crowd. I mean, you know, there's plenty of room for a character in WWE, you know, especially for a guy like Cena to go out there and said, you know, I did the right thing for my entire career and it didn't matter. You know, you people decided that you didn't like me anyway. So the hell with you, I'm just going to do what's best for me. I mean, it's worked for, you know, a version of that has worked for Mark Henry, you know, and Cena has that much more ammunition behind him, and I think he could make it work too.
Exactly, and now that we've, you know, talked about that, John Cena heel turn that it seems like everyone in wrestling seems to talk about for hours on end. I'm going to shift real quick to just plugging the .NET membership section here. You get audio like this on a weekly basis, where we don't always ramble about a John Cena heel turn, although I do try to bring up a John Cena mustache at least once a month. You also get the .NET weekly show with Jason Powell and Chris Shore talking about the news of the week and breaking it down. A lot of times you're going to get first-run news in that show that you don't hear anywhere else. It's pretty much a must-listen for all of our .NET members because it's that good of a show. And, you know, there's that much news in it. It keeps you informed on what's going on in the wrestling world. Plus, you get exclusive interviews done by Jason and Chris. This week, actually, there is a two-hour-plus interview with Sean Daivari from WWE, TNA, and a little stint in ROH that Jason just did on Monday. Fantastic interview with some great little news tidbits and thoughts on and Daivari on his career and, you know, his time with Muhammad Hassan and that and the controversy stirred up by that, wrestling Hulk Hogan on his 21st birthday, and really just some awesome stuff. One of the best interviews with the .NET membership side of things. We also have interviews with Gregory Helms, Chavo Guerrero. We don't have them with Chavo Guerrero. What am I saying? Who else is there, Jake?
He had interviews with Michelle Dayton, Chris Jericho, yeah, along quite a while ago. You know, there's been quite a few interviews over the last year that there are the special members interview section where he covers, or Jason's had several two-hour interviews that have all been very engaging. And Chris Shore's had a couple as well that have been a good listen to. I think Christopher Diaz had one with Jason too about his theater project, and you know, all of them have been very fascinating.
Yeah, really great interviews. Plus, you get Q&As with Jason and Chris where you can ask him questions about wrestling history. And even a lot of times, if there's something in the news or something from the last few years that you want to know, Jason will talk to his sources inside of WWE and TNA and find out for you. He's really great about helping the members out that way, and he normally, if he doesn't know, he can find someone who knows and probably get you a pretty solid answer that, again, you're not going to get anywhere else. Plus, you get member-exclusive news articles. A lot of times when news breaks, the .NET members hear it first before anyone on the non-pay side. And if you're wondering, yeah, what's this going to cost? If you take the annual option, it's about $5.50 a month. If you don't want to take the annual option and just want to try it out, $7.50 for 1 month. You can try it out, check out our audio, check out the member-exclusive news, and check out the .NET members forum. And you're not going to regret it. It's a fantastic choice. Jake and I actually were both members for a long time before even coming on staff at the website. So we can back up that it's a product we were totally chill with paying for.
Yeah, absolutely. I was a member for 2 years before taking on responsibilities on the site. So it was a good product then, and I like to think it's better now.
We're here. Come on. Anyways, let's move on now to the worst list on our countdown now that we've gotten a little bit of a commercial break in there. And, again, these are our three worst moments of the week. And let's start it out with a little bit of TNA action. And it's our number three worst moment of the week. The fact that they ripped off Survivor Series for their main event on Thanksgiving Day. I don't mind elimination tag matches. In fact, I like them a lot of times. I don't mind WWE doing one on Thanksgiving Day because it was their idea originally. And Survivor Series usually falls around there, so you're likely to see one on Thanksgiving week. But doing a Survivor Series match or an elimination tag match on Thanksgiving Day, that was just a little too much for me. It was a solid match action-wise, but it was a little too... ha, 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 we're ripping off WWE and not saying it. It just didn't need to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's other ways they could have gone about it. I mean, it was obviously a direct rip-off. And, you know, there have been other promotions that have done elimination tag matches, but I don't know how many of them were on national TV and did it within, I mean, it would have been taped probably before Survivor Series. So it was in the can long before Survivor Series went on the air, so it was a pretty obvious swipe. And you know, while the match wasn't bad, it definitely felt like one of those egregious rip-offs that we see TNA do from time to time. And you know, while it isn't necessarily you know, a reflection on any of the talent in the ring, it just kind of speaks to how you know, how obsessed they are with WWE at times and how petty they can get, you know, about appearing like competition for them. So, you know, it wasn't a bad match, but it, you know, the whole air around it kind of felt kind of cheap as a result of the rip-off of the stipulation.
Yeah, and I just wonder who in creative brought it up and went, you know, WWE does their elimination tags around this time of year. We can set up a little elimination tag action, and went, that's a great idea. Can we call it Survivor Series? I almost feel like that's how the creative meeting had to have worked. How did no one in there go, guys, doesn't it really seem like we're being kind of a cheap rip-off here? Maybe we shouldn't do this.
It's even more odd considering Pritchard and Russo, you know, booked Survivor Series in the past, you know, and they know, you know, what that match, you know, means to WWE and its history. So, yeah, very strange to say the least, especially considering they had it in the can ready to go, you know, probably the week of the Survivor Series pay-per-view.
Yeah, that they were so ready to... Like, but they said, oh, this is a Thanksgiving show. Obviously, we need an elimination match. It just seems weird, and it did make TNA feel like a cheap WWE copy. And really, I felt like this whole episode of Impact, and we'll get into the most egregious part of it later. Oh, there's more, folks. But this whole episode of Impact to me, it felt like TNA said, man, we had a good product back in 2007 when we were ripping off WWE a little bit more. Maybe we should do that. And that this episode was a huge step back from the vast improvements that TNA has made over the last 6 months. It was just stepping back and going, we're tired of those guys. We wanna do this now.
Yeah, I don't know why they you know, they seem to have this odd obsession with ripping off WWE from time to time, but they definitely seem to do it. And you know, they also have an odd preclusion to throwing belts on former WWE superstars, you know, immediately after they arrive in the company. And, you know, it's almost like they have a serious inferiority complex. And I don't think they need to have one, because I think they have plenty of homegrown talent that can deliver entertaining stuff.
Yeah, they really do. On that note that you just brought up, is John Morrison the next TNA World Champion?
I would say by April, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, wouldn't shock me. If he ends up going there, I would not be shocked to see John Morrison win it in a cage at Lockdown. Which actually, depending on who he's in there with, could be a pretty damn good match. But it's still, you know, giving it to a WWE talent as opposed to, you know, I don't know, these guys, Robert Roode and James Storm, maybe you've heard of them and the awesome work they're doing. Yeah. But now moving on to our number two worst moment of the week. And this is more of a realization that struck me this week as I sat there and I watched wrestling and I, you know, just watching every show. What the hell happened to Jack Swagger? The dude went, and we talked about this a little bit in that Money in the Bank discussion earlier. But the dude went from being world champion, and it then, okay, he's competing for the mid-card titles, that's chill. But what is he even competing for now? He's losing. Anytime you see Swagger in a singles match, you know he's losing, even if it's against Santino. It's like WWE said, yeah, he's a great athlete, and he's a pretty good wrestler. We don't want him. We're just going to play around with him now.
Yeah, I don't know if he's got some personal issues or what the problem might be. Excuse me. But he's definitely got some issues he's got to work through, because WWE is not taking him seriously right now. And it's a shame, because I think he's supremely talented in the ring, and I think he's got good size, and we know he can talk. I mean, I thought when he joined up with Vicky Guerrero that it was going to be, you know, a boost for him. But so far, he's just turned into Dolph Ziggler's lackey while he's been climbing the ranks towards the top of the card. So Swagger's definitely in a position right now where he's on a downswing, and I'm hoping he finds some motivation soon, because you know, he's kind of turning into one of those guys that could be on the bubble to get released on Black Friday or something if he falls too much further down the ladder, because they really haven't been doing much with him for well over a year now.
Yeah, and it's just sad. I mean, I even liked his comedy act a little bit. I think most people were big fans of the Jack Swagger Soaring Eagle. That was the best mascot in wrestling history. I don't even think there's a competition. I just think you give it to the Jack Swagger Soaring Eagle. I even thought that worked for him. It wasn't main event? No. but was it just enough to get a little bit of heat and, you know, get him over with the crowd? Oh, yeah, and it was fun. And now when I watch Jeff Swagger, I don't feel like it's fun. I don't feel like it's exciting. I feel like it's, yep, Jeff Swagger's here. Well, he's about to lose. Oh, look, he's doing push-ups first. That's basically a Jack Swagger match for me.
Yeah, the push-ups thing, I mean, I suppose, I mean, I said they haven't done anything with him in over a year, and I guess I have to correct myself because he was involved with Michael Cole for a while there around WrestleMania last year. But, you know, in between those stints, I mean, the guy really hasn't done anything. And I'm not sure, you know, what the issue is, if they don't think he has it on the mic or what. But he's definitely kind of fallen, you know, out of the graces of WWE creative, you know, kind of into this funk. And I hope he recovers from it because he's one of those guys, you know, that on a given night with the right guy in the ring with him, he can have a great match. And, you know, there was a time when we thought he would be a perennial main eventer, but I guess that time has passed. But it's all too bad because I like Swagger, but at this point he's just not taken seriously by anybody backstage, it would appear.
And I think it's still possible that he could end up being a perennial main eventer. I don't look at him and go, he's done. Because when you look at what even 2 months of solid booking can do. Great example here, Mark Henry. I mean, he was the smiling Kool-Aid man in a red singlet, coming down, making fans happy, but he was doing nothing. I mean, he was in a tag team with MVP. MVP got fired or got released, and Mark Henry was just kind of hanging out. Well, what is he now? Oh, no big deal. Probably, you know, the hottest heel of 2011, one of the biggest stars in wrestling today, and really an unexpected surprise, putting on fantastic matches, especially for a guy of his size. Well, what can a couple months of good booking do for Jack Swagger then? A guy with all of the athletic talent in the world. A guy who would be so easy to get fans behind either as a heel or a babyface. I don't think it's hopeless for Swagger. I just wonder, what the hell happened to Swagger? Where did he... I mean, we've heard the stories about him falling asleep backstage and things like that, but what went so wrong that they said, we're going to take this guy who could easily be the next big thing in this company, yeah, and we're going to make him a joke?
Yeah, it's hard to explain because, you know, we don't know what kind of attitude problems he has backstage, whether, you know, he's uncooperative with, you know, a road agent or something and they just buried him. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know what issues are keeping him from moving to the top of the card, but I mean, it's definitely not anything that has to do with what he can do in the ring. I mean, you know, he's shown he can have great matches, even long matches that are, you know, very compelling to watch. So, you know, I hope whatever the personality issues or whatever, you know, has soured him gotten creative to sour on him, you know, is resolved. Because, you know, I think we both agree that he's talented and can be, you know, one of those top guys. And I guess another example of somebody who, you know, who can show you what it's like to get revived. I mean, Wade Barrett has seen that just recently too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's definitely always the opportunity to revive people. It's just a matter of whether or not, you know, they can get over whatever hump is keeping creative from investing their time and energy into doing it.
Exactly. And now let's move on to something that I never want to see revived. And that is our number one worst moment of the week. And, oh, this one makes me so sad to be a wrestling fan. Because it was the knockout division with Thanksgiving Thong Thunder on the Thanksgiving episode of TNA Impact. I cannot tell you how angry I was watching this on Monday as I sat down and watched the wrestling shows I had missed over the weekend. It was absolutely ridiculous. It's Thanksgiving. It's a family holiday. So you'd think TNA would want to put on a show, maybe hearkening back to the old, you know, big Thanksgiving cards in the good old days and the territory days, and put on a show that, you know, if I'm sitting there with my mom, my dad, my wife, you know, in the room, I can say, I'm going to turn on this wrestling show for a little bit and not be ashamed. But I can turn it on and know I'm going to get some good, clean wrestling. I'm going to have some fun watching it. And, you know, this is a way that TNA could even gain fans. Because if their overall rating is down, well, five people might have been in the room watching it instead of one lonely, lonely person. But instead, they decided to give us the trashiest segment of 2011 with Thanksgiving Thong Thunder. I'm pretty upset.
Yeah, this was beyond ridiculous. I wouldn't want to watch that, you know, any segment involving the Knockouts right now if my wife or really any female that I think respects me, you know, I wouldn't want them in the room for any of this stuff. I mean, it's really, you know, I don't know. I guess maybe having a young daughter kind of alters my perspective on women, but, you know, seeing this stuff on wrestling shows is just so unnecessary. And, you know, it kind of offends me that, you know, either TNA, I guess, or, you know, you might be able to lump WWE in on this as well. You know, they never treat their female talents like something that might actually attract female fans. There are always these, you know, over-sexualized, you know, and, you know, whether it's Song Thunder or, you know, the mistletoe match on SmackDown this past week. You know, there are always these, you know, sex pots that go out there in their lingerie or, you know, and you know, sometimes the ring gear is probably even more revealing than lingerie. And they go out there and, you know, they toss each other around by their hair and, you know, they scream like they're, you know, involved in a kung fu movie, you know, to kind of synthesize sex sounds and whatnot. I mean, it's all overdone. And, you know, the fact that Karen Angle on the Thursday show before the match decided to berate the women about not being sexy enough, and then they go out there and they do this ridiculous song match, and then afterwards she berates them again for not being sexy enough. I mean, it just comes across as extremely, you know, degrading to women and just a serious lack of respect for women. And I'm sure, you know, the talents involved don't feel that way. They just probably think, it's just an entertainment show and it's all, you know, fictional anyway. But, you know, for viewers, especially viewers that have, you know, wives and young children that might actually have to maintain respect, you know, they aren't encouraged when they see stuff like this on a wrestling show. It just comes across as really low rent.
I could not imagine watching that segment with my wife in the room. Like, she wouldn't, like, yell at me for it. It's not like I'm whipped and she's going to, you know, get angry. She would just be, and she watches wrestling with me on a regular basis. She even, you know, she'll watch, she knows Monday nights we watch Raw. She goes to events with me. She goes, you know, she's a wrestling fan, not like me or you, but, you know, a fan. But I couldn't imagine watching that show with my wife in the room just because it's so trashy. I mean, it made me feel dirty. And as a wrestling fan, and even belittled wrestling fans, it belittled male wrestling fans, like Karen Jarrett going, those pervs out there, they want to see you in your bra and panties and all. But no one's sitting there saying that. And anyone saying it, well, they probably shouldn't be watching wrestling anyways, because there's this neat thing on the internet called porn they could watch, and they're probably going to get more entertainment out of that. So it's just ridiculous to me that this match occurred, and especially on Thanksgiving. Like I said, I can't think of a segment that made me more embarrassed to be a wrestling fan in a long, long time.
Yeah, I mean, and the Knockouts thing has been going on for a while now. You know, they had, ever since Karen took over, it's kind of become this, you know, kind of trash fest about who can be the most ridiculous. And it's too bad because I think, you know, women's wrestling, you know, has an opportunity to be, you know, I mean, there are legitimate, look at people like John Cena or anybody who's a hero to young kids. I mean, you know, you have the opportunity there to have characters that appeal to kids. And, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to have as a part of your product. And they never really do that with the women. You know, they're always just kind of, oh, you're this wrestler's love interest now, or, you know, go out there in your skimpy wrestling gear and get thrown around for a few minutes, and we're not going to really give you any kind of story. Your job is just to look sexy. And yeah, I think that's a mistake, because I think there's a lot of money left on the table, and there's a lot of, you know, potential female wrestling fans out there who feel like, the, you know, all the wrestling companies care about doing is treating them like objects. And, you know, I don't think, you know, if you're going to run, you know, a wrestling promotion, I don't think, you know, you can have that for some characters, but I don't think all characters should be geared towards the same audience. I don't think that really is good for business.
Yep. That's basically all I can say is that, you know, it degrades women, especially the women on the show, and any women watching will most likely be disgusted by it. It degrades their fans and, you know, shows what TNA thinks their fan base is. I mean, was it really supposed to be the lonely dude sitting alone on Thanksgiving that they were building that show for? Because that's just sad to me. That's sad on many levels to me. And yeah. I hope it was a one-night thing for the knockout tradition. But it really was, well, you know, someone might be sitting alone on Thanksgiving. We're going to, you know, give them a treat, if you will. And as bad as that method of thought is, a worse method of thought would be, well, this draws, so we're going to keep doing it. Because much like that lockbox challenge on that live Monday night show they did in 2010 with the, you know, well, now you've got a script because that's what your lockbox says. I really think that this is one of the trashiest things that can be done in wrestling, and it's going to lose them fans in the long run.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So that's the .NET Countdown, folks. I hope you've enjoyed this little treat of an audio update from Jake and I. Again, we do this show weekly for .NET members, and if you want to know how to sign up for the .NET membership, go ahead and head on over to ProWrestling.net. On the right-hand side of the page, there's a sign-up link. You can't miss it. Click on that, and it'll give you all the information you need. Jake, anything to add?
No, man. Thanks for another good show. Talk to you next
week. Sweet. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we hope that you jump on board and that you get to hear more of the .NET Countdown and all of the fantasticality that ProWrestling.net has to offer. Have a good week, folks.